workers from your slumber, all you wage slaves, everyone.
The revolution comes like thunder, and the age of hypocrisy is done.
Turn off their televised illusion. Stand up and look them in the eyes.
Declare your mental liberation. Shake off the dust and claim the prize.
So comrades, come rally. In the last fight, let us face the internationale. Unites the human race. So comrades, come rally. In the last fight, let us face the internationale. Unites the human race.
Bridges special presented by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And yes, another world is possible. There are alternatives. It's time for a new economy. Two of the nation's leading activists talk about creating jobs, and more jobs, and creating a new economic model to realize another world is possible. Ed Whitfield is co-founder and co-managing director of the Fund for Democratic Communities, F4DC, a private foundation that aims to promote economic democracy and cooperative economics in the U.S. South. In his work with F4DC, Ed helped initiate the formation of the Southern Grassroots Economies Project and the Southern Reparations Loan Fund. Whitfield has been in the forefront of not just envisioning, but actively building a new economy grounded in justice, democracy, and sustainability.
And Stephen Pitts is associate chair of the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, which focuses on issues of job quality and black workers. In this arena, he has published reports on the economic issues in the black community, initiated a black union leadership school, and shaped projects designed to build solidarity between black and Latino immigrants workers. Currently, a major area of his work involves providing technical assistance to efforts in developing black worker centers around the country.
And Ed Whitfield, Stephen Pitt, it's good to have you with us. I want to begin with what triggered me yesterday was the New York Times Magazine section, actually. Stephen, you focus a lot on public sector jobs. Now, the public sector has long been home of the sorts of jobs that fit people into the middle class and keep them there. But jobs have been shrinking at every level of government. Like we could look at Louisiana with local offices losing tens of thousands of workers, the state government losing 31,000 workers, and the federal government 1,600 workers. Since the recession hit, private employers have added 5 million jobs, and the government has lost 323,000 jobs. Public employment certainly hasn't recovered. Tens of thousands of layoffs for public sector's employees. And we can look at Wisconsin, which thinned its ranks of government workers thanks to Scott Walker. So as of 2013, where we see still the humongous differentiation between white households. On an average, they are 13 times wealthier than black households. The biggest gap since 1989. The question becomes, really what is the mechanism for building a new economy, for certainly creating the kind of jobs that for young people, to give them a future, to give them hope. These are humongous questions, but I know both of you are up to the occasion. So who wants to begin with this rather mammoth dilemma that's been laid out?
Well, I can start, and I know Steve will have quite a bit to say about this.
Yes, and please feel free, both of you, to have a conversation.
Yeah, from the standpoint of the worker center movements and black labor, I'm kind of place-based and geographically looking at these issues from the southern region of the United States, which is a region that has been devastated by a history and ongoing presence of racism and exploitation. But it was a region that helped to generate much of the existing wealth that dominates the world. I mean, the Industrial Revolution was largely paid for out of the profits of the slave system in the U.S. South. And that's a lesson that I think should not be lost on people who are looking to create a new and better world, that there's certain moral implications in my mind of that origin story. But both my parents were public service workers. My mother, her entire working career was in public education. My father ended up working at the post office of public service jobs. You know, the quality and stability even of being a school teacher and the postal service are being threatened by the ongoing economic crisis and austerity measures and cutbacks and such. But one of the things when you talk about, you know, how can we provide for the upcoming generation of young people, one of the ways I like to think about it is that we are in a process of helping to build foundations and structures on which it will be those young people who themselves have to build rather than us providing it for them. We're not going to leave a gift. Not that I wouldn't want to, but I don't think that it's actually possible. That one of the ways I like to think about this is that, you know, we're not engaged in how to create a more meaningful world in a world that is sitting waiting for us to do so. The world is dynamic right now. The economic, social, military crises that we see around us are part of the motion that our work has to be integrated into and the things that we have to fight to oppose. So we're looking at changing a world that is itself already changing many times and in many ways for the worse, but it's not static. It's not sitting there waiting for us to come up with some really, really good idea that we can just put in place and see how that works. So in that context, we have, you know, these growing economic financial crises where a lot of people have been convinced by the language of Margaret Thatcher was there is no alternative. And so much of the work I engage in is helping people realize that there are many alternatives and that we have to begin building them in such a way that we capture the imagination and the energy of our communities and the young people in those communities about the possibilities of new ways of approaching things that are centered around meeting human needs and elevating the quality of life rather than being centered around the ever-increasing expansion of extraction and the accumulation of capital in a world that's dominated by capital. The world ought to be dominated by human values for the purpose of expanding the quality of life in our communities and meeting people's needs, and it's not even what it's built for. So much of the work I engage in is trying to help figure out how can we resource sustainable projects that can become models for development and inspire the imagination of communities to realize that we have a different way of building and developing and building an economy rather than the way that we've been told is the necessary way that we know leads to untold misery and hardship.
A couple of things I want to add to that. First, Ed, it's good hearing your voice again. It's good to be in the same space with you. And I wanted to say a couple of things to compliment things that Ed said. It seems to me that the source of the problem is a lack of power. And to me, I start with that kind of proposition, that if you can talk about a deteriorating quality of life for working class people, of all races, starting from the mid-70s, that deterioration was a result of conscious policy choices made by the elite. And so in my mind, the paramount issue is how do you build power to allow us to have other choices to be made. And so from that line, one thing we're doing is trying to see how we can increase the quality of organizing among black workers through forming these black worker centers, which should be locally based organizations, membership-based organizations of black workers who would basically, where they exist, find ways to change the power dynamics at their place of contention. And so in Los Angeles, people are fighting in areas of construction and trying to ensure that you have both quality jobs in construction and that black workers in L.A. can get those jobs. They have, along with doing that work, began to expand and trying to make sure that when the city begins to examine the question of wage theft, they also look at the issue of employment discrimination, which they call the ultimate form of wage theft. But those are actual power battles. In Chicago, people have focused on 1 billion base in the form incarcerated and have been involved in a statewide coalition trying to eliminate the box on employment applications at the state level. And now they're examining other issues in Chicago. Here I am in Oakland, California. People also looking at the question of the former incarcerated and finding out how we can maximize the space that the former incarcerated have to get good jobs, which includes both looking at and discrimination in hiring, including how to reallocate savings the state has because of the release of folks from prisoners. In Baltimore, people examine the issue of wage theft. And so the issue, I think, really is how do you kind of drop anchor in a locale, develop membership-based organizations, and from that activity, build power to transform things locally.
I appreciate that, Steve. You know, the question you raised about building power is a central part of the work, I think, that lies in front of us. It's a work that has been going on for quite a while. I don't want to pretend as though we're just now realizing that people have to work and build power. I'm a child of the 60s, and I never have gotten very far away from the discussions I heard growing up about black power, which just made a lot of sense to me, that we want to build, within black communities, we want to build the power where people have the capacity of meeting their needs and taking care of and doing things for themselves, and that power has been taken away from us, and it has to be rebuilt. Within the breadth of the country itself, the power has to include the power of drawing in people from the margins to be more decisively part of the discussion of what kind of life do we want, what kind of country do we want, how do we want to be in the world. You know, none of the things that we're talking about in the United States are completely isolated to the United States because they all stand in relation to foreign policy activities and international activities everywhere. You know, for the Johnson administration, the abridgment of the war on poverty because more money was needed to pursue the unjust war in Vietnam is one of the ways that we can see the kind of immediate contention between what goes on here locally and what goes on nationally. But certainly all of it has to be transformed by transformations and the creation of power, and it has to be a power that's based on a real informed and creative response to the existing situation in the world. One of the things I worry about is that much of what power really represents is the capacity of people to act in concert around their own needs and interests. What damages us so much is that we have a situation where the media is able to manipulate what some people understand as reality and has huge numbers of people acting ultimately very, very much against their own self-interest. We have an election process supposed to be democratic, and we're going to end up with a choice between neoliberalism on the one hand and neo-fascism on the other hand. This is something that is largely created out of that kind of alternative reality that is created by the mass media, where, again, money is able to dominate the airwaves in terms of what it is that people hear and see and how the framing, how the narrative of what the world is really about has been so distorted as to have huge numbers of people functionally acting against their own best interests every day, making choices for things that are wrong. So we have to begin working as we are building power in creating a new narrative, in fighting against the old and corrupt, and in building the new so that it doesn't seem as though we're talking about imaginary utopias, but we're talking about real, actual ways of constructing a different kind of economy. A large part of what has been done with questions of economic reality is to make people think as though the economy is scientific like physics, and these are just the laws of it, and this is just the way it is, as opposed to realizing that the enclosure of nature, the fact that some people took this gigantic ball of dirt that we live on and decided that they just owned huge pieces of it, and ultimately roughly every square inch of the world somebody will claim that they own at this point, and that this enclosure gave right to the extraction and accumulating of all of the value that is created in those areas, and that this accumulation of value ended up creating the tools that allowed a further distortion of how power exists, because those tools amplify the activities and the interests of some people over and above the activities and the interests of others. So these are choices that were made at different historical periods, and that have to be undone by people, and it is exactly the exercise of power, as Steve correctly points out, that will end up doing that. And again, the question of creating models and examples on the one hand, of changing the narrative, and in helping people understand ways to fight as we engage people in moving past the cynicism of an acceptance of the idea that there's no alternative, to realize that there are many alternatives that they are worth fighting for, and that those fights will not be without sacrifice, but they will be ultimately and absolutely valuable and worth the effort that we have to put into them.
And one reason why I'm excited about what you're doing, Ed, is I think that there are a lot of different strategies that we will have to embark upon to build that power. And so it's my thing is like always let 100 flowers bloom. It's really important we do that. I think it's also important that people have a sense of what is possible. And so in every kind of arena we fight in, it's important to give people a sense of this is doable. It's all also really super important. One thing I would want to mention is I think that people – I'm not clear I would agree that people are really acting against their interests in some ways. I think that people have multiple interests and multiple identities. And the fascinating question is why, at one point in time, one identity takes precedence over others. Okay, so I'm black, I'm old, I'm male, I'm straight, I'm from Chicago, I'm left-handed. A lot of identities. Why does something come to the forefront? I think that in a more nuanced way to look at it, oftentimes really the lack of power and the lack of seeing an alternative is what gives rise to people elevating certain identities and suppressing other ones. So I remember when a friend of mine was knocking on the doors in Ohio back in 2004, and he was he's a white guy talking to white women in Ohio, and she went on and on about Walmart and healthcare and blah, blah, blah. I'm not voting for Bush. And all of a sudden, you wondered how you could have the first part be on time and the second part be crazy. I think part of the problem is that we haven't been able to give people a sense of what is doable, what's inside their control, and therefore, if people think that some of their concerns cannot be addressed because of the lack of power, they begin to fall back on what they can control. So that's why, again and again, I talk about the importance of power and actually bringing about the transformation we want to see. A second reason to talk about power, I think, is because oftentimes in liberal circles, the source of the problem is not seen as being power. It's lack of skills in the abstract, lack of wealth in the abstract, lack of behavior in the abstract. I just think that when we start with those issues, we go down a path that would be less positive for our people than starting with a path that says power needs to be developed. In the course of that power acquisition or power building, we do a lot of things that's important.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I say that people are acting against their self-interest sometimes, I remember Randall Robinson recently released a video where he was talking about what happened to Aristide in Haiti and the kind of vicious military coup that overthrew him, transported him out of the country, and the involvement of the Clintons in that. And one of the statements he made that just really kind of struck me was when he said, you know, those black people in South Carolina that voted for Hillary, they didn't even know this. And I believe they didn't. So I believe that there's a huge way that information is distorted that allow people to think that there are things true about the world that ultimately aren't in the final analysis true. And while there are these complex overlapping identities in terms of who any of us are, sometimes the lack of information about things that are going on that we would care about contributes heavily to us acting against certain kinds of things. And certainly what you're pointing out, Steve, that the lack of recognition of the possibility of being able to address some things caused people to just kind of leave that out of their thinking about how they will engage with each other to do things in the world. So we have to do all of those things. I think we have to make sure that information is believable information is readily available to people. We have to make sure that alternatives are available to people. And we have to engage people in something that helps build up their own sense of their own capacity to change, their own agency, their own capacity to make change. We have to constantly remind people of the various forms in which that takes. We can't lock people into thinking that there's just one way to do this, and either you understand it or you're good at that and or you're out of it. But this acquisition of skills and all that you're talking about is, to me, part of an understanding that these man-made tools of development, which include everything from language and education itself as a human creation, as opposed to, you know, silicon dioxide, which is a rough component of sand, that was not a human creation. It was there. We had to figure out what to do with it to make glass out of it. Then the glass is something that we built, and it allows us to make windows that we can see through to keep the weather out. You know, we create these tools, and the tools enhance our power. And so access to the tools that we create, you know, has to be democratized. And we think of that through education, but we have to understand that education is not a value-neutral proposition. There's no generalized education. No one ever can know everything. So you can learn how to plow in a straight line, and that can be your education. You can learn how to ask, do you want to supersize this, and that can be your education. Or you can learn the business model canvas about how it is that you can construct viable business things, and that can be your education. So what we are learning, you know, is connected with certain kind of choices, have to do with how we develop and build power in our communities as well. And a lot of times we see the control of education.
I just want to give Steve Pitts the last minute. Clearly, we need more time for this discussion because we haven't even gotten into the nuts and bolts yet. But the philosophy behind building a new world as possible is of grand significance and importance. Steve Pitts?
The last word in this conversation is to compliment what Ed said, is that in addition to information, I think people need to have vibrant, what we call Black Freedom Dream. People have to have a sense of a world beyond the today's world we're striving for. And oftentimes they have that sense of these freedom dreams. They're willing to go through brick walls to accomplish it. And so I think that's an important element to our transformation as well. But it's been a great conversation. I've enjoyed being on here. I look forward to continuing it.
We're going to. Insist. You know, Ed Whitfield, Steve Pitts, they're involved in all kinds of important things. We are just skimming the surface. I know they're going to come back for a full, comprehensive discussion on the work that they're doing because it is critical to our existence. It's critical to fighting for the power, for the working class. And we have been speaking with Ed Whitfield, who is co-founder and co-managing director of the Fund for Democratic Communities. We haven't even begun to talk about it. I really want to hear more about the Southern Reparations Loan Fund and Stephen Pitts, associate chair of the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, who focuses on issues of job quality and Black workers. So much more to be said. Brothers, I insist that you come back.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later, man. Happy May Day, everybody.
And workers of the world, indeed, unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. And we'll see you again. We build bridges.
Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on, the mad lord? Which side are you on, boy? Which side are you on, the mad lord?
See, I gotta draw a line. I can't take it no more. If you ain't down with revolution, what you waiting for? Build Making money for suckers and not communities poor. Ripping flags off of coffins, man, this ain't our war. Colonized and terrorized by the world's biggest killers. The U.S. government, the biggest weapon and drug dealers. Filling prisons with children, incarcerating the future. MySpace and Facebook got us stuck on computers. Stuck on stupid music that's abusive to the shorties. And the nonsense that you're speaking, they just listening and absorbing. I've been dormant, I've been working, I'm a giant, I'm ready. I'm with the Apple and Oaxaca and we hold the machete. I rock hard like Palestinian children holding slingshots. I'm with every single kid that's down for hip hop. For the culture, the life, what it really stands for. This music is resistance, it's the voice of the poor. I'm on the side of the workers, the teachers, the lunch ladies. On the streets with brown mommies, raising our brown babies. I'm with youth organized, cleaning up the Bronx River. I'm like Jaime Escalante when I stand and deliver. I'm with Evo Morales, man, he running Bolivia. Distribution of the land so we can all live bigger. I'm with Hugo and Fidel, Grandmaster Romelli Mel. I'm with the Panthers up in Queens, justice for Sean Bell. I'm with Camacho Negron, I'm with Ojeda Rios. Freedom for Oscar López, time to get in the field. I'm with Abu Jamal, I'm with Asada Shakur. I'm with the compas in the mark, and he getting a penny more.
Has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.